step by step.
All right, let's get started. How's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Zach. Thanks for joining us tonight. We're going to start in a minute our two-minute silent meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that will make noise or might distract others from the meditation. We take this time to get connected with God and let the craziness of the day drift off and help us focus on the step study. So ask him to help you. And once we turn off the lights, we can begin. If you want to join me in saying our family's fog light prayer, it's on the cards in the seats in front of you, or if you don't know it, just follow along with me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light for those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. From there is a solution from the big book. The tremendous fact for every one of us is we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. That is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked a friend, John, to read Spiritual Experience for me. This is Appendix 2 from the big book. Our goal in working the program outlined in the book is to have a spiritual experience in order to attain permanent sobriety, and we read this because we think it's important that we know what that looked like.
Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. Spiritual experience.
The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate, overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference of long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honesty, facing his problems in the light of our experience, can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, John. Please also refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, which means, you know, we'd like you to please turn your phones to silent or meeting mode, which is off. And if you'd like to have a conversation or text, we ask you please take it outside because it's distracting and disrespectful. Thank you. With that, I'd like to introduce our speaker tonight, Russell. This is our last week with you, and it's just been fantastic and inspiring so far. So I'll let him get started.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks a lot. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the, I've just switched groups to the South Dixie group. I love the Carl Gables group. I've been there for like 20 years, but I find that because of geographical things, I don't get there much often, and I seem to be hanging out at this other group, so I figured, you know, how the alcoholics are, you know, we hard time changing, so I said, well, I might as well have a home group that I actually go to, so I made that switch. So it's good to be here tonight, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I, since January 25th, 1981. So what is it, January 22nd? So in a couple days, if I make it, I guess I'll have 34 years. I've been road testing this thing for 34 years, so I want to share some experience with you on this incredible I might even talk about the step tonight. It's a possibility. We'll see how that works out. Carrying the message, the spiritual awakening. I guess if you have the spiritual awakening, you'll carry the message. You carry the message. We all carry a message. I tell a story. I call it the chicken on the roof story. Some of you have heard it before, but it's something that happened to me when I had about 3 years, which taught me something that I needed to know about step about the 12th step, about carrying the message. And, you know, there is a possibility that my disease may have something to do with ego. And I don't mean ego in the good way. I mean like false pride and stuff like that, you know. And I know, according to the book, it has something to do with being selfish and self-centered. And if you have the kind of disease I have, the kind of alcoholism I have, being selfish and self-centered means that you take a lot of stuff personally. You tend to think a lot about yourself. As a matter of fact, all you think about is yourself. And even when you think about others, you think about others in terms of, you know, what do they think about me? You know, why is this happening to me? You know, it's all about me, 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 me. And somehow, no matter how much you fix your mind on anything, like I'm there, I am so much in the middle of things. You know, it says in The Great Fact is This and Nothing Less, we have been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. And then when it talks about The Great Fact is This and Nothing Less, at the bottom it says, we come to believe that God is becomes the central fact of our life. The central fact of our life is that God is living in our hearts in a way which is somehow miraculous. God becomes the central fact of our lives, and that's hard to do when I'm the central fact of my life. I wake up in the morning thinking about me. All through the day I'm thinking about me. I go to sleep thinking about me. If I think about you, I'm wondering what you think about me. It's all about me. And with that mindset in mind, I make decisions throughout the day. Who I'm going to hang out with, what jobs I'm going to apply for, how am I going to handle situations. The big book says these decisions, the reason I get in trouble is because I make these decisions based upon self and selfishness. To me, it's not self or selfishness. It's just natural. It's like being right-handed. It's just the way I think. Seems right to me. Seems smart to me. I just tend to make decisions. I don't understand why that's so bad. If you're managing your life, of course, we have a program that says you can't manage your life, but don't pay attention to that. You know. Of course, you got to manage your life. That's stupid. I love the program. It's a great program, but it's kind of stupid. You know what I mean? I mean, it says you can't manage your own life, but of course, you got to manage your life. You know. So if you got to manage your life, I don't know, the way I manage my life is I think about what I need and what I have to have and what I can't lose, and then I basically make decisions based upon me. And does it sound crazy to you that if I make a decision, does this sound crazy? If I make a decision, don't you think my decisions should be decisions that would help me? Do you think I should make decisions that would hurt me? Decisions that would cost me money and cost me time and cost me... It would seem to me that if I'm smart and I'm wise, the decisions I should make should help me get to where I want to go and get the things I want and get the things I need. So, you know, I don't think that's too crazy. I think most of the world thinks that way. Unfortunately, I've come to believe that decisions based upon self, based upon the way I just said, which seems logical to me, will kill me. Now, I don't quite see that. I don't quite understand it. It makes no sense to me. This program is counterintuitive to me. So I'm going to read you a couple of things. I'm going to tell you about this. I was doing a step series. I started doing these series when I was about 5 years sober. And I was doing a series in Homestead, Florida. And so I went down there, and it was a group like this. It was probably half this size. And I was doing the step series, and I don't know what step I was on, step 4 or something like that. It was during a period of time in my life when I would do a step series and I'd actually talk about the step. And because I had no experience, so, you know, when you have no experience, you might as well talk about the step and your experience with the step. And so I was doing this step 4, and for some reason, as I was doing it, I didn't think the group was, like, responding to it. You understand? I just didn't feel the love. You know, they weren't laughing at my jokes. They didn't think I was funny. I didn't know what it is. And, you know, alcoholics, you know, we're sensitive and we, you know, we think about ourselves a lot and we worry about ourselves a lot. And I'm there to carry the message. And, you know, when you're there to carry the message, you know, they got to like you and you worry about, you know, like Ecclesiastes, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. Are they understand what I'm saying? Or they get what I'm saying? You know, are they going to drink? You know, you start worrying about, you know, if somebody drinks, you didn't carry the message properly. And so I had decided somehow after I was finished with the meeting, for whatever reason, I had decided that it was the worst fourth step meeting in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me ask them, has anybody here ever had the experience where they shared at a meeting something and they walked away from the meeting and they said, and you started thinking about what you shared and you couldn't go to sleep at night? You're saying, those people think I'm so stupid. I can't go back to that group. You ever do that? I remember calling up a sponsor at 3 o'clock in the morning. My sponsor at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was, they asked me to chair a meeting, to chair the meeting, you know, chair a discussion meeting. And I had about like 6 months or 7 months, and I chaired the discussion meeting, and it was a typical hour-long meeting, and I spoke for 55 minutes. You're supposed to speak for 10. I was obviously in practice for this meeting. Except the difference then by now is back then I had nothing to say, but I managed to take up 55 minutes. Some of you are thinking, well, that hasn't changed much. But in any event, so after the meeting, and the thought came to me, you know, I'm pretty much selfish, but the thought did come to me that maybe I had shared too long, that I should have given the group more than 5 minutes to, you know, to talk, you know what I mean? But, you know, I lost all track of time and everything like that. But then the more I thought about it, the more I thought about how I had screwed up, you know, how I really screwed up. And then I started thinking about how they must be thinking about me. They're probably talking about me right now. I started thinking about, you know, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, have the power to cast. I started thinking about what they might be thinking about me. Then I started thinking about they were talking about me. I started thinking, I'll bet they're making calls about me right now all over AA. You wouldn't believe this guy Russell and what he just did, you know. And sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. And by the time it was around 11:30, 12 o'clock, I couldn't get to sleep because I thought I'd have to join AA in another state because I was convinced that this was spreading all over AA in South Florida about the meeting I had just did. And by the way, that kind of anxiety has something to do with alcoholism. And so I called up my sponsor at around 2 o'clock in the morning because I couldn't get any sleep. And he did say, you know, before you drink or anything, call me. He did say that to me. So I called him up at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I explained to him why I was calling up. I said it was an emergency because, you know, for me it was an emergency because I was going to die because I was getting very depressed. And I told him, he said, what's the problem? He says, I really screwed up this meeting. I said, what happened? So I told him what happened. I said, I was supposed to chair this meeting, and it was my home group, and it's a discussion meeting. And I started talking, and I only left him like 10 minutes to share, and I know I screwed up, and it was terrible, and it was horrible, and, you know, I don't know what to do. So he said to me, he said, well, let me ask you something. He said, what did they say to you after the meeting? And, you know, they knew I only had whatever it is, 5-6 months. And he said, what did they say to you after the meeting? And this was the old Killian Pines group. And he says, well, they came up to me and they said, they thanked me and they told me to keep coming back, that they appreciated the meeting. And he said, what else? He says, no, that's it. They came up to me and he said, thank you, keep coming back, and thank you for the meeting. And he said, Russ, he says, I think they meant it. I said, really? You think they meant it? He says, yeah, I think they meant it. I think you're okay. I think you did a good job and they meant it. I said, really? He said, absolutely. I said, thanks. And I went to sleep and it was gone, just like that. He probably stayed up for 3 hours, you know what I mean? But I felt better. I felt better. So you see, when you're an alcoholic, you're sensitive. You worry about stuff like that. So that's the kind of sensitivity you have, and at least that's the kind of sensitivity I had. And thinking about yourself, worrying about yourself, worrying about how you sound, worry about what you said. And so I was doing this step meeting down in Homestead, and I was there to, do the step meeting and carry the message and do all that stuff we're supposed to do and save people and all that stuff. And I did this four-step meeting, this meeting on the four-step, and at the end of the meeting, I got that feeling again that I had just done the worst four-step meeting in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'm driving away from this meeting, which was the worst four-step meeting in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was saying to myself, I can't go back. I was doing the same thing. This is like, three or four years sober. This is how far I had progressed. You know what I mean? This disease hangs on for a long time. And I was saying, I can't go back to that meeting. I was really terrible. That was the worst meeting. It was a horrible meeting. They're probably talking about me right now. And I'm trying to figure out what excuse I'm going to make. Now, I got to tell you something. Now, I knew, even as I'm saying this in my mind, because if you're an alcoholic like me, you're an excuseaholic. I mean, any alcoholic worth his salt can figure out, I'm a rationalizer. I tell myself rationalize. Any alcoholic who's worth his salt can figure out a way to get out of something that he's uncomfortable in doing. I call him up and tell him, I'm sorry, I can't finish the steps because my grandmother died. Or you know what I mean? And so I run out of grandparents, and I say something, and I'm thinking. But I somehow, by that time, because of serious sponsorship and wonderful sponsorship, I somehow had gathered something like a little something called integrity. Now, I don't know whether it was integrity or fear. I'm not sure what it was, or a combination of the two. But there's one thing I had going for me. And the one thing I had going for me throughout 34 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, the one great thing I have going for me, because you run into a lot of crazy crap, a lot of crap you don't want to do, a lot of bad stuff, is more than anything, I didn't want to drink. Let me tell you something. When more than anything you don't want to drink, you'll find yourself doing all sorts of crazy crap, that you don't want to do if you think there's a possibility you might drink. And I was one of those guys that I was scared. I was always concerned about going back to the drink. I never wanted to go back to the drink. So somehow in the back of my mind, my sponsor had always said to me, whenever anybody asks you to do anything in AA, you always say yes. You never say no. I found out later on there are legitimate reasons to say no. But I didn't know what a legitimate reason was because I'm an alcoholic. To me, fear is a legitimate reason. You ask somebody, why don't you chair the meeting? And they say something like this. This is what an alcoholic says. An alcoholic doesn't say, I'm scared. They say, this is alcoholic code now. They say, I'm not ready. When you ask somebody to do a meeting and they say, I'm not ready, what they mean, what they're telling you is, I'm scared shitless. You know what I mean? I know I'm going to screw up. They're going to laugh at me, and then I'll have to kill myself. And that's because I can't stand the fact that people, that's what it means. So, he knew that I didn't know that. And an alcoholic has a tendency to decide to stay scared for a long time until he's forced to doing something. So he knew he had to tell me, when anybody asks you, say, you say yes. And I somehow knew that even though I didn't want to do it, even though I had just done the worst four-step meeting in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew in the back of my mind that I was going back there. I was going to go back there because I hadn't had a drink in 3 or 4 years, and I knew it had nothing to do with me. I knew it had something to do with my sponsor, these steps, and following directions and doing this deal. And I just somehow knew that if I didn't follow through with my responsibility, that this was going to come back at me and I might drink. And so I was going to go back, even as one voice is telling me, don't go back there, it's the worst four-step, the other voice is saying, you're going back there. So the next week I went back to the meeting, to the Homestead group meeting. And I'm sitting there waiting to start the meeting on the fifth step, and a guy comes up to me. Some guy walks up to me, and he says to me, he says, can I talk to you for a second before the meeting? He says, sure, we have a few minutes. What can I say to you? He says, well, my name's Fred. And he says, and you probably don't remember me. He says, but I was sitting in the back of the meeting, last week's meeting. I said, yeah. And he says, I just want you to know that that meeting saved my life. And I said, no. Now you got to understand, I'm thinking it's the worst meeting. And they hate it. He says, that meeting saved my life. And I said, I'm sorry, what? He says, you saved my life at that meeting. That was the most incredible meeting. You saved my life. I said, what? He says, let me tell you something. My wife has left me. She took my kid. I lost my job. I have nothing. I was getting ready to go out and drink, and I knew this meeting was going on, and I decided to go into the meeting to see, you know, just to see whether there was any help I can get or anybody could say anything. And I sat in the back of the room, and I was depressed because all this was happening to me, and I saw no way out. And he says, let me tell you something. When you said the chicken was on the roof, the entire program came together for me. And so I was thinking, because I had never said the chicken was on the roof. Now, don't get me wrong. I knew the area he was talking around because I was talking some poultry there, you know what I mean? There was like a poultry spot, you know what I mean, where I sort of knew what he was talking. But I didn't say the chicken was on the roof. He got it all wrong. I said the turkey was in the basement. Now, I was bright enough, thank God, to not say, no, you got it all wrong. You know, I took credit for it. I said, oh, yeah, chicken on the roof. I say that all the time, you know. And he says, well, I just want you to know that you saved my life, you know, when you said chicken on the roof. And I realized something. I said, I had just done the worst meeting, the worst four-step meeting in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, this is amazing. The worst four-step meeting in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And some guy comes up to me and tells me I saved his life because of something he heard me say that I didn't say. And then I realized what this deal was all about. You see, what happens is that's how mysterious God is. That's how God works. That's how invisible he is. You see, I thought my job was to carry the message. That's what I thought the 12-step was that I was supposed to carry the message. And, you know, the problem is if that's your job to carry the message, you think, you ready for this, that you have to carry the message. Does that make any sense? Now, if it's your job to carry the message, that means you're responsible for carrying the message. And that means that if you don't carry the message, if they don't get the message, you screwed up. And so I got to worry about whether any of you sickos even understand what the heck I'm talking about tonight. Whether you laugh at my jokes. And God forbid if somebody should. What happened to that Alcoholics and God group? I heard last week after a meeting they all got drunk. I guess it had something to do with me, you know what I mean? Or they all stayed sober. I guess it had something to do with me and my message. Whatever it is. And you know, I realized that what happened was I went up there and I did the worst meeting in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it was the best meeting I could do that night. I mean, really, I tried to do the best meeting I could do that night. And then I looked at the step again, and I realized it didn't say I had to carry the message. It said we tried to carry the message. I'm not even responsible for the message. All I have to do is try. I get up here, I try to carry the message. It could be the worst message in the world. It doesn't even matter because he can turn shit into shinola. Because I'm up there doing the best job I can, speaking, giving them the worst meeting in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, and some poor guy's back there about ready to commit suicide, not knowing what he's going to do, where he's going to go, thinking this is the worst thing that ever happened to him. And I say turkey in the basement, and it goes floating across the room, turkey in the basement, turkey in the basement, turkey in the basement, turkey in the basement, and it hits this guy back there, and it goes into his ears, turkey in the basement, and God knows what God knows best, this guy's heart, and what he needs, and he hears I don't know what happened. Chicken on the roof. And all of a sudden, he's healed, and get this, and I get the credit. I get the credit. And all I had to do, God says, you just show up and try. I'll take care of them. I'll handle them. You just do what I'm telling you to do, Moses. Don't worry about Pharaoh. I'll take care of Pharaoh's heart. You understand what I'm saying? Don't worry about them. Don't worry about whether they like you or not. You just do what I'm telling you. You just be obedient. I know you're scared, and tell them, do what I'm telling you to do, and I'll take care of that deal. And I started realizing that the whole deal about this is not whether they like you, whether they don't like you. I mean, if I tell people the truth when I'm doing the steps, and I just try to be as transparent as possible, if I tell them the truth, I know like 10% of people are going to think I'm full of crap and they're not going to like me. They are, because it's like that sign in my office at A Few Good Men, the truth, you can't handle the truth. The alcoholics don't like the truth sometimes. Sometimes the truth is not a nice, sometimes the truth is not pleasant. But the fact of the matter is, what I have to do is try to carry the message. And that's one of the precepts that I've got to understand. So, you know, stop worrying about who's in charge here, the God's in charge here. So I was about a month, I was about, I don't know, about a month sober. I was at a meeting before I came here, and somebody was talking about how he woke up in a black hole. He woke up in a black hole, depressed. Anybody ever wake up like depressed or in a black hole or, you know, something like that? And I started thinking about it. I mean, it's been a long time since I woke up like that. But I started thinking about how I used to, for the first year or two or three or four or five, like have bad, you know, alcoholics don't have bad days. They have like bad centuries, you know. There's been a bad year, you know. I mean, you just sort of like, you just, it's just all turns to crap, you know. And he was going through one of those deals, and I know that that has something to do with what that really is it's not a black hole, it's alcoholism. That's what it is, alcoholism. We're selfish, we're self-centered, 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. It's all about self-pity. My mother was a self-pityaholic. I hated my mother for that. I hated being around her for that, and always drinking and feeling sorry for herself. Poor me. I hated hanging out with her, being living in the same house with her. I was never going to be like my mother. I turned into my mother. I turned into a guy who was sitting by the radio record player, drinking myself silly till I was unconscious, listening to the same song over and over again, you know, Running on Empty, A Pirate Looks at 40, Only the Lonely, Rainy Days and Mondays, all those good Alky songs, you know. I turned into that self-pity. I know what that self-pity is all about. I don't even need to drink and to get into that self-pity thing. When you're a self-pityaholic, it's like scotch. For me, it's like scotch. You know what I mean? I couldn't stop drinking scotch. I couldn't stop drinking self-pity. It was like just one of those things. It was my personality. You know, that's just the way I am. That's just the way I built. Anything that's going on the planet Earth around me is worth feeling sorry for yourself. And I couldn't think my way out of self-pity. I couldn't do anything about self-pity. It just came upon me. Whether you want to call it a black hole. And I woke up, I was about a month sober. And one of the great things that happened to me is I got fantastic sponsors. I got fantastic sponsors. I've had three sponsors and a lot of mentors that were friends of my sponsors. And these guys were hardcore AA fantastic sponsors. Great people. Because the important thing about, well, it's not only the sponsors, that I didn't want to drink. Because I've sponsored many, many people, and it doesn't matter what kind of sponsor you are. If you suggest somebody or you tell somebody to do something and they say, screw that, I'm not going to do it, it doesn't matter what kind of sponsor you are. You have to have the willingness to do it. And so I had these incredible sponsors that knew the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and knew what the deal was, knew it was counterintuitive, knew what worked and knew what didn't work, knew how my mind worked. And this sponsor I had for the first 10 years, Bob Sullivan, he was a sponsoring 12-stepping fool. He was constantly going out to drunk tanks, going out to places, taking me around, introducing me to people. He was constantly helping people, going to meetings. And so one Saturday I woke up and the self-pity was about me. And I was thinking, you know, when you start thinking with that committee, you know, 1,000 miles per hour, all about, and it's all crap. And somehow, some way, I decided that I would get up, it was like 6 o'clock in the morning, get in my car and drive. And I drove to Detox on 27th, I think it was off of 27th Avenue or 17th Avenue in Miami, where they have Miami Detox. And you could walk in there at that time, I don't know whether you can do it now, at around 7 o'clock in the morning, and they had an AA meeting. It wasn't necessarily open to the public, but it was there. They'd let you go in there if you were in AA. And I walked into that meeting, and there were about 20 people, men and women. Some of them were 18 or 19. Some of them were 20. Some of them were 40. And they were all off the streets. And they were wearing those hospital gowns, you know, with the slit in the back, you know what I mean? And they were shaky and everything like that. I mean, right off the streets. And I was the only guy there, like, in jeans and a T-shirt, you know, that was a civilian. So, yeah, I mean, I had a month's sobriety, so I was already an old-timer. So so I did the meeting. And I did this meeting for them. And after the, and, you know, of course, they come up to me. Well, you know, they talk to me, and thank you very much. And I was talking to them, and I got up after the meeting. And I don't know what happened. It was like a drug. I felt like I was, I remembered like it was there. I felt like I was walking on air. I felt like I was on a cloud, like I was on top. Whatever the heck was bothering me was gone. It was over. It was unbelievable. How this happened, why did it happen, why I decided to go down there, why I even got, you know, because I'm an alcoholic. What I would usually do is sit at home, pull the covers over and think about it more. Try to think myself out of it. Think about what my problem was. Maybe turn on a sad song. Maybe watch TV. The last thing that would ever occur to me is to go to a meeting and try to help anybody else. I'm not even sure I went to the meeting to help anybody else. Maybe I just went to the meeting because I said I needed a meeting. But it happened to be a meeting where I was the guy there leading the meeting. And I had 1 month. You know, I hear people say I can't sponsor somebody unless they have 6 years. Thank God Bill Wilson didn't think that way. I mean, you can help anybody, no matter where you are on the steps, you just can't give away what you don't have. You can't give away what you don't have. But you can help anybody. And here's what Bill Wilson said in his story. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problem. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is designed for living that works in rough going. And as I look back on my AA life, I realized that every time I went up to my sponsor feeling sorry for myself, or any mentor in Alcoholics Anonymous with some incredible, intractable problem where my life was over, somehow, at the times I remember, they always turned me towards service. I remember the first time, I might have told you guys, I went up to my sponsor, I don't know, about 8 months or a year sober in the old Killing Pines group, and I started telling him about all the money problems I had and whatever the problems I had, and he looked at me after I explained to him about all the terrible money problems I had, and I didn't have enough money to get to the end of the month, and what was I going to do? I had 4 kids and everything like that, and, you know, because I'm asking him, this is serious stuff. I mean, AA is nice, God is nice, the God thing is nice, but what do you do when you have real problems? What do you do when you have real problems? You know what I mean? You know, where the serenity prayer won't fix it, when you got real problems. And I'm telling them about real problems to my sponsor, who obviously should give me a loan or something. You know what I mean? Because money. I went up to a gal once, a psychologist in AA, Claire Madan, old timer, wonderful gal. And she and I had a I had about 4 years or something, and she said, I was telling her about all my problems. She said, And after I explained to her how terrible things are, she says, let me ask you something. Would money solve your problem? I looked at her. I said, what are you talking about? She says, would money solve your problem? I said, well, hell yeah. Of course. Haven't you been listening to me? Of course money would solve my problem. And she says, well, if money will solve your problem, then you don't have a problem. Now, let me ask some. How the hell can you reason with somebody as crazy as that? This gal had 30 years. I had whatever the heck I had, you know, and I'm telling about my money problems, and I can't go to sleep at night. And she says, would money solve your problems? Like, she didn't. I said, of course it would solve my problems. She says, well, then money will solve your problems. You don't have a problem. I said, what are you? This is why it takes so long to get sober. Because how do you get into that mindset? I didn't even understand what they were talking. She was talking about. She said, Russell, if money will solve your problems, you don't have any. I said, let me tell you what a problem is. A problem is when, I said, you have a son? I said, yeah. I said, how old is he? He's like 7 years old. He says, what if he had inoperable brain cancer and he was dying? Would that be a problem? I said, hell yes, it would be a problem. Well, what if money couldn't solve it? What if you had the money? I said, he says, a real problem is a problem that money can't solve. You have a child that's dying, or you have terminal cancer, or there's something going on that no amount of money in the world can solve. That's a problem. You know, money comes, money goes, it's here, it's not here, whatever it is. You know, money is not the problem. If you have a problem, if you have a problem that can't be solved with money, that's a real problem. And all of a sudden, now, I'm not saying I immediately turned, but I sort of understood what I started putting things in perspective. I understood what she was talking about. And so I go up to Bob Sullivan, and I say to him, whatever it was, I was 8 months sober, and I say to him things like, and these are not things that you learn and you pick up immediately. These things may take 5, 10 years. It may take 10, 20 years to turn that mind. I mean, you know, listen, you may think, listen, one day I looked a guy in the eye and I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. That's what I said. I said, I was 31 years old. I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. You know when I started having a drinking problem? 15 years prior to that. I started having a drinking problem 15 years prior to that. I had a real drinking problem 10 years prior to that. It caused a divorce for my, definitely 6 years prior to that, it caused the divorce for my, I had, if you came up to me at any time during that 15 years and said you had a drinking problem, I would have told you to go to hell. 15 years later, after crashing and burning and losing everything and come to the end of my rope, I look a guy in the eye and say, I need help, I have a drinking problem. And drinking is just the symptom of the disease. It's not even the disease. The disease has to do with the way I think. It centers in my mind, not my body. It has to do with feeling sorry for yourself. How many years and how many problems do you think you have to experience sober after you stop drinking to realize, I got a problem with the way I think about money. I got a problem with the way I think about people. I got a problem with the way I think about everything. You know, how many years do you think you have to go through and do that? And so I go to my sponsor. How many meetings do you think you have to go to when you're depressed and you're told to help somebody, and you help somebody? Now, you would think that that meeting I went to, when I walked in and helped those people, and all of a sudden I was amazingly lifted up on my feet. Now, you would think if you were depressed and you were suicidal and you went into a meeting and all of a sudden you tried to help somebody and you were amazingly lifted up on your feet, you would think, and you said, man, this is incredible, and you got it, you would think that you would figure that deal out right away. I know what the answer is. I got to go out and help a lot of people. I got to sponsor people. I got to do whatever I can to talk. You would think I would get that right away, right? 10 years later. 15 years later. I figured it out. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. I figured out what the design for living that works. Listen, I'm here for me. I mean, I my whole life is thinking about me, 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 and I'm a lazyaholic. You know, if I feel bad, if I feel depressed, give me a pill. Let me go to a meeting, say something to me so that it make me feel better. Do something. The last thing on the list, right up there with praying, is seeing whether I can help you. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me to help you, to make me feel better. It doesn't make any sense to me to drive from Miami and spend the money and the time 1 hour to Fort Lauderdale through the traffic to come up here to talk to you, you know what I mean, and give the worst meeting that I've ever given in my life for what, it doesn't make any, why can't I just go home and get this thing, you know, just turn on the channel, watch TV, go to a psychiatrist. I don't know why it worked. How long do you think it takes to figure that? I want to be able to do it. They asked Bill Wilson, what do you think of people that don't drink and don't go to meetings? He says, I have no use for them because they have no gratitude. He said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease. I got to keep on talking about it and telling other people. That's how grateful he was. I go to my sponsor. I tell him about my money problems. I tell him about all the problems that I'm having in my life. He looks at me. I was going for my PhD in mathematics. I'm a law student. I'm national science. I mean, I've got a rational thinking. I'm educated far beyond my capacity to understand anything. He's a used car salesman. He hasn't even graduated sixth grade. So I'm telling him these deep, incredible problems I'm having. And he looks at me and he says this. You know, you need to start making coffee for the group. I said, Bob, don't you understand what I'm saying? The mortgage is due at the end of the month. I don't have much money for the mortgage. I'm broke, Bob. Don't you understand? I have enough money for gas for my car. I don't know where I'm going to get the money. Don't you? He says, no. Yeah, I get that. I understand all that deal, Russ. I understand what you're saying. But, you know, I said, have you ever made coffee with the group? I said, no, I haven't made coffee. He says, you know, we have coffee here, and every Friday night we need, and I think you ought to start making coffee with the group. And I said, well, what's the use in arguing? This guy obviously doesn't get it. He doesn't understand. I'm talking about money. He's talking about coffee. But what am I going to do? I've got like 8 months. He's got like 20 years. He's telling me, so I say, so how do you make coffee? So he shows up. He says, you're in charge of making coffee for the group. So I start making coffee for the group. The next time it comes around, I don't want to go to a meeting because I'm depressed, because I still have that money problem. But I say to myself, I say, but I got to go to the meeting because I got to make the coffee. So I got to go to the meeting because if I don't go to the meeting, who's going to make the coffee? So I go and I make the coffee. Somehow, I don't know how it happens. The money comes in. I don't get moved out. My life isn't over. The next week, I go to the meeting again to make the coffee. Some guy comes up to me. He says, I'll make the coffee. I said, this is my job. I make the coffee in this group. 8 months later, I'm saying to my sponsor, I say, you know, I've been making this coffee for 8 months. I can't keep on making this coffee. I want to get rid of the coffee. And I went to the meeting, the business meeting, and I told them that I couldn't make the coffee. I wasn't going to make. I needed somebody to make the coffee, and nobody volunteered. He said, Russell, these are alcoholics. Nobody's going to volunteer to make the coffee. He says, they're never going to volunteer to make the coffee as long as you're making the coffee. Don't you understand that? I said, you're becoming a codependent. He says, this is what you do. Announce at the next business meeting that as of today, you will never not be making the coffee. Trust me. When the coffee's not made, somebody will step up and make the coffee. Then he said, I had a sponsor. My next sponsor told me I had to be secretary of the group. He says, this group needs a leader. You're the guy. You need to be secretary. I didn't think they needed a leader. I didn't think that, you know, he says, you're the secretary. Became secretary of the group. It's group representative. Then he said, you need to be the intergroup banquet chairman for the next 2 years. Intergroup banquet chairman for the next 2 years. One of the years I brought down a guy named Johnny, and I'm not saying this to sort of say, look at the stuff I did. I'm just telling you, because none of these things were my idea. I mean, thank God, for left to my own devices, I would do what, quite frankly, I see most people in AA do. I ain't sponsoring somebody unless they come up to me. You know, they're going to have to find me and beg me to sponsor them. You know what I mean? I ain't doing nothing. My basic idea is I go to meetings to get my happiness, to fix me, because I need a meeting, and then I'm out of here. That would be my deal. My deal would be I don't drink, and I go to meetings, and I'll read the big book, and I'll do the steps, and then I'm out of here. The last thing, I'm not here for extra credit. You know, I got a life. Listen, thank you. I got 4 kids. I got a law practice. I got a life. You know what I mean? Thank you very much. I haven't had a drink. You know, I go to a home group, and that's it. I'm not here for extra credit to do service. You know, my sponsor says, so I bring down this guy from California, a guy named Johnny H., incredible circuit speaker, incredible. And so I was shepherding around for the weekend, and I really, you know, sometimes you meet people in Alcoholics Anonymous that, you know, you're just awestruck by them. And they say you don't put people on pedestals, but there's just something about them. It's just the way they carry themselves and the way they are and the way they're just genuine. They're just authentic, you know. And they just make you, just to be around them, they make you feel good. They just sort of propel you to a different level. And I was really in awe of this guy, and he did an incredible meeting, incredible talk. It's on the internet. You can find it. It's the whatever. It's when he came down to Miami-Dade, an unbelievable talk. And he was leaving to go back to California. You know, and, the, you know, Bob Earle called these guys Eskimos. Bob Earle calls these guys Eskimos. These are guys, people you meet in AA, where you're walking in a certain, you know, if you continue to walk in the direction you're walking, you're going to wind up where you're headed. And you'll be walking in a direction, and all of a sudden you bump into one of these guys, one of these Eskimos, that you'll never see again, and they say something. They say something to you, and it changes your life. And all of a sudden, instead of walking this direction, you turn and you start walking in this direction. And you bump into another one of these Eskimos. And Johnny Harris was one of my Eskimos. And so he's about to get on the plane, and I'm looking at him, and I'm already missing him. And I said, can I have your number? Do you think I can have your number so I can call you? And he says this to me. He says, sure, call me anytime. He says, I'm in the book. You know, I figured his number was like unlisted because he speaks all over. He says, Russell, I'm in the book. I said, you're in the book? You're not unlisted? He said, Russell, this is what he said. I'll never forget this. He looks at me and he says, Russell, I don't know what fellowship you're in. They always give me like a little shot, you know? He said, I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm available. I'm available. You know, I tell you, I'm just telling you, my sponsor, ever since I heard that, I'm available. I have people come, and I'm not putting down anybody. I'm just telling you, this is the way I do it, and this is the way my sponsors do it. I have people coming up to me and says, you know, I can't sponsor more than two people. I can't sponsor more than three people. Man, listen, I sponsor, you know, somebody, you know, my sponsor said somebody asked you to sponsor. You may think the biggest goof in the world. They obviously see something in you don't see in yourself. You say, you know, let me tell you something. You got to sponsor 10 people to get one. You sponsor 10 people, maybe two call you up, you know what I mean? And you talk to two of them, and you tell them to go here or there, whatever it is, to meet you at a meeting. Only one's going to show up anyway, you know what I mean? You got to sponsor 20 to have three calling you up. You want at least three people calling you up every day, telling you to commit suicide and kill themselves. You know, you don't want to have any time to think about yourself. You know, you want to make sure you're sponsoring so many people that by the time you're working up a good, I think I'll kill myself. Why is this happening to me? Fred's on the line saying, that's the end. I'm going to kill my wife. You know what I mean? So you can spend a good hour with him. You know, you got to do a lot of stuff. You know what I mean? A lot of service just to keep your mind. My sponsor told me, this is where it gets good. One of my sponsors, Joe Snyder, my second sponsor, said, you need to get on Relay. I didn't know what Relay was. You all know what Relay is? I got on Relay in Miami. Anybody calls up between the hours of 11 o'clock on a Friday night and 8 o'clock on Saturday morning, Alcoholics Anonymous in Dade County, I got it. I get the phone call. You know, you say how your sleep may be interrupted. Here's what they say. They say in the book under Working with Others, they say nothing so ensures sobriety than intensive work with alcoholics. That's not like once in a while, a good deed here and there. Nothing so much than intensive work. Here's what it says. This is what it says. This is on page 97. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. Helping others is the foundation stone. Whenever I meet anybody who has some time in Alcoholics Anonymous, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, 15 years, and they come up to me, 20 years, and they're not doing well, I generally ask them, you know, I may ask them, have you done your 4-step or 5th step? But when they get some time in there, like 5, 6, 7 years, and they're not doing well, and they're telling me about all their problems, I ask them just one, because everybody has problems, I ask them one thing. And this is the only thing I ask him. I say, how many people do you sponsor? And invariably, they say something like, none. Or, well, I sponsored three, but two drank and one doesn't call me. And I said, well, that means you sponsor none. I said, no wonder you feel sorry for yourself. No wonder you're going through problems. The only person you're thinking about is you. I had a guy, thank God, I've sponsored him for 30 years. He's got 30 years now. I started when he was 18 years old. When he had about 7 or 8 years, he went through a rough patch. A rough patch. Had something to do with money. Something was going on. So he comes up to me, and this is what he says to me. He says, I'm going through a real rough time. And I said, so how many people do you sponsor? He says, well, I sponsor about five. He says, but I'm going to tell them to get another sponsor. I want you to understand what I just said. This is the way alcoholics think. This is the way we think. This is our natural way of thinking. He's going through a rough patch. He's sponsoring five people. They love him. He's sponsoring them. And what his solution was to going through a rough patch is to, he says, I'm not doing a good job for them. They need to get somebody. His solution was to put himself in a position where he wasn't sponsoring anybody. That's what he decided his solution was. I said, listen, let me tell you what your solution is. He says, what? You need to sponsor 10 more. Five ain't enough for you. You need at least 10 more calling you. You're thinking too much about yourself. Let me tell you what it says in the book. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You get that? A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the good Samaritan every day, if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep. Many nights' sleep. Great interference with your pleasures and interruptions of your business. It may mean sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitarium, hospital, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time, the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he has violence. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. This is, don't we read this thing? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. This is the crap they were doing. Now I understand these days, with all the hospitals and detox centers and everybody, half the people that come out, they look better. I understand that some of this stuff you may not have to do anymore. But there's a lot of stuff we can do that we don't do. And yet we still think we're thoroughly fine. So I got on this relay thing. You haven't found out about alcoholism or alcoholics until you've been on relay from 11 o'clock at night to 8 o'clock in the morning. A lot of fun. And let me tell you, the calls, 3 o'clock in the morning, because, they call you up at 3 o'clock in the morning. You get all these calls, 3 o'clock. You talk about wives being pissed off, 3 o'clock in the morning, the phone jangles, and you get up, and some gal's on the phone, and she's talking to you, and you learn real fast about alcoholism. You're not on the phone with her for about 3 hours, you know what I mean? And she's talking about the plantation she used to live on and her father and mother. And she says, could you hold on for a second? She says, sure. And then all of a sudden she leaves and you hear cling, cling, cling. She's putting the ice in the glass and she's talking. And then after about 2 hours of that, it's now 5 o'clock in the morning, you say, well, about this, the drinking thing. And she says, what do you mean? He says, well, you want to stop? He says, I don't want to stop drinking. She's just lonely. You know what I mean? I mean, you learn real after a couple of years of that. By the way, I was on relay for 8 years. You know why? Because once you're on, it's like the Roach Motel. The roaches go in, they don't go out. Once you're on that deal, nobody's tapping you on the shoulder saying, can I have that job? You know what I mean? I got a call from one guy one day. I was on a job for like 3 or 4 years doing this thing from 11 o'clock at night. He calls me up. He says, I'm down here in downtown Miami, and he says, I'm drunk. And he says, I need help, and I need to get detoxed. And I said, well, where are you? And he tells me where he is. And I said, well, if you start walking now, you'll get there by sunrise. And he says, excuse me? I said, if you start walking now, he says, you're only about 5 miles away. You'll get 5 or 6 miles away. You'll get there by sunrise. And he said, that's not the way we do it in Vermont. He said, who is this? I said, I'm Russell. He says, Russell, what? I said, well, he says, just tell them Russell. They know who I am, you know. He says, I said, you're not going to report me, are you? I hate to lose this job. One gal calls me up and says this. She says, listen, I've got a PhD in nursing. I've got a little girl. I've gone through treatment. I was a year sober and I started drinking. And I can't stop and I'm sort of worried about it. I need to stop drinking. He says, there's only one problem. He says, what? He says, I'm asking you for help. But he says, but don't talk to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, well, listen, I said, here's the problem. I said, you know, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't had a drink in an X number of years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous and something else. You called Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, if you tell me you want to stop drinking, but you don't want to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, that's like a non-starter. You understand what I mean? I mean, I don't have an answer for you. That dog, as they say in Georgia, that dog don't hunt. You know what I mean? You made the call to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you get all these calls just like that over a period of 8 years. You get to feel them. You get to figure out really fast how to sponsor people, how to deal with alcoholics. It's real good training ground. Many times it's a lot of fun dealing with them and talking to them. You're sitting there. You're hoping somebody calls, you know? You're looking forward to somebody calling. Just so you get on the phone instead of spending 2 hours, and they say things like this. They say, hello, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. This is an alcoholic. Hello, yeah. He says, you know, what kind of, and they start, I said, well, wait a second. He says, no, you got to listen to me. Because they're the boss, and they woke you up, and you got to listen to them now. You know, because that's the way alcoholics are, defiant and arrogant. And you learn. You learn how to let them talk for about 30 seconds and say something like this. They say, do you want to stop drinking? How's that for a question? How's that for a question when you get woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning? Do you want to stop drinking? How's that for a question? And they say things like, well, I'm not sure about that or something like that. You don't spend 3 hours on the phone with them trying to convince them they ought to stop drinking. You know, you figure out how to deal with people, how to sponsor people, how to handle people. And you know, some of you start doing that and start doing that kind of work, you find that over a period of time, you start thinking about yourself. You stop worrying about yourself. All of a sudden, you don't even realize that you're not feeling sorry for yourself. You don't even realize that you're getting to that Claire Medan moment where, you know, if money's the problem, there ain't no problem. All of a sudden, you're not going to meetings anymore because you need a meeting. Or you got to have a meeting. You're going to meetings to see if there's anybody in the meeting that you can help. Is there anything you could say that would contribute to the meeting? And it's not that you don't need meetings. It's not. As a matter of fact, you're looking more forward to going to meetings because you want to see, because if there's anybody there, you want to make sure you can help them. You start getting addicted to helping people and loving on people. And then you notice, you look around and say, holy shit, this place, this world is like loaded with people. And all of a sudden you start realizing that there are people that are hurting out there who are as crazy as alcoholics, and they're not alcoholic. And they got the same problems as alcoholics, but they don't have a drinking problem. And what's crazy is you can talk to them about the same stuff you talk to them in AA, and they respond. You could tell them about the Claire Medan thing. You can say chicken on the roof to them, and they hear turkey in the basement. And all of a sudden, you've got a whole world filled with people that you can help because you now have a new job of being of maximum service to God and other people. And all of a sudden, you've got joy in your heart, the joy of living, which is different than happiness, which comes and goes depending upon your circumstances, because joy has to do with not your circumstances, but who you are. It's like having brown eyes. It doesn't matter whether you have money or doesn't have money because you always have joy. And it's a whole different deal because you're doing this thing. And then every once in a while on relay, I'll tell you something that happens. Once every 6 months, something like this happens. It's pretty cool. You stay on the phone for 8 years because the reason you do it, because every once in a while there's a hole in one. every once in a while, what happens is you pick up the phone and there's a guy at the other end of the phone and he says something like this. You ready? He says, I need help. I can't stop drinking. That's what he says. And then he shuts up. You know why? You know why he shuts up? He doesn't say, you need to listen to me or here's my story. He shuts. You know why? Because he's waiting to hear what you have to say, because whatever you tell him, he's going to do or she's going to do. And you say, listen, you called the right place. And you start talking about your story. And you say, do you want to stop drinking? This is what I want you to do. Tomorrow at 9:30, there's a meeting over at the Sunset Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to be there. My name's Russell. Why don't you meet me there? Or you give him to somebody else. And then you meet him there. And maybe he becomes your sponsor, or he or somebody else sponsors him. And that's what you do. And you live for that kind of stuff. Just like Bill Wilson lived for that kind of stuff. And then one day, when you're reading this book, you see yourself in the book. You read this thing, like you read this part right here. You say these last eight, and he sold himself short. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life. Trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, and get this, above all, you ever go up to somebody after meeting and you say, you're talking to me? You're telling my story? You ever hear somebody meet and say, that guy's telling my story? He's talking to me? That's my story? Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. The love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. Now think about this disease. Think about how horrible this disease is. Think about what it does to your mind, how you think every day. Think about how difficult it is. Any of you have ever sponsored somebody or talked to somebody or tried to help somebody to explain to them that the answer to their problem is to stop thinking about themselves and go out and helping other people. Just walk into the nearest bar and talk to somebody about that. It's a tough sell when you're dealing with people and all they want to say at meetings, all they want to say at discussion meetings is what's wrong with their life. And why they're not happy, and what they need, and how they're getting bad breaks and misunderstandings. You know what I mean? And all they want to talk about is how things are going wrong. And you're trying to explain to them, you don't get it. It's not about you. It's about, are you helping other people? The incredible thing is, when you think about the alcoholic selfish personality, you know, what did Dr. Young said? Ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are the guiding forces of these men's lives are unbelievably, spiritually, psychically changed. And they become dominated by a whole different set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. From me, to how can I help others? I mean, it's like a incredible, miraculous transformation. And here's the incredible thing, and here's the great thing. The great thing is it happens. It happens. It happens to people in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the miracle. The The miracle is it happens where that selfishness and self-centeredness, what it says, God does that. Above everything, we must get rid of that selfishness and self-centeredness. It must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. Somehow, not my idea. You think for 5 seconds on my own without a sponsor, I would have figured this out, that all I got to do is sponsor people and be on Relay for 8 years. My wife is yelling at me, put down the phone. You think I would have figured this is the deal? My idea is pop a pill. I need a sleeping pill. Give me a joint, you know. I mean, I need a snore. You know, that's my idea is I'm going crazy. I need a psychiatrist. It has something to do with my brain chemistry. The last thing I think about is helping other people. I would have never come across this unless I had somebody breathing down my neck saying, do this and do that, and I had the willingness to listen to their fool idea. And think about that. Somehow, some way, we take these alcoholics, all they're doing is thinking about themselves, and it happens. There's a transformation. And all of a sudden, their whole life changes. The way they look at things, the way they act, you know, their whole life, what's important to them, what's not important to them. It all changes. It's incredible. And if they don't change, if they don't get involved in this thing, in the 12 step, which, by the way, is part of the 12 steps. It's not like we have 11 steps. There's the 12 steps. These are the thorough things that we have to do thoroughly. If they don't change, then they don't get this deal. And it is. And let me tell you something. An alcoholic who's just sober physically, without that change, without that psychic change, is an alcoholic. Is an alcoholic who's not in recovery. And if you hang around here long enough, you'll get to deal with guys who have, like I do, who have 10, 15, 20 years, sometimes 30 years, and are feeling sorry for themselves, or have a chip on their shoulders, or are miserable, or are resentful, who have all the things that you had when you walked in the door here, except you want to know something? When they say, anybody got 20 years, they'll be picking up the medallion. And they'll tell you to the face, well, they don't drink and they go to meetings. And they've worked the steps. They've worked the steps. By main work the steps, and we did the four steps. But you understand what I'm saying? That's the that's the importance of the trying to carry the message of the 12 step, whether it's sponsoring people, where it's service. I'm going to leave you with one last story. This is going to take 30 because I got to tell this because this just happened. This is a miracle. I was approached by someone. She may even be in here. She's here. She's here. I did a meeting at the 12 step house at because I know what works. I know what works in here. And I know sometimes it's a mystery. It's a mystery when you're feeling bad and you're feeling down. How am I going to get out of this? It's a mystery to alcoholics. A gal comes up to me. She's about, I don't know, 30 years old, 25, 30 years old. And she's got a few years. And she's telling me what they, you know, got problems, not feeling good and everything like that. And I say, what do you think I say? What do I say? How many people are you sponsoring? What do you think she says? No one. Okay? So I said, you need to sponsor somebody. You need to sponsor somebody. You got 3 years. You need to be sponsoring somebody. Says, you know what she says? Because they always have good excuses. Nobody's asking me. Nobody's asking me. Good excuse. Good excuse for somebody except for a guy who's been on Relay for, you know, for 8 years. And what? Because she wanted some. This is my sobriety. This is my sobriety, and if I need to sponsor somebody in order to stay sober, I don't give a crap whether you ask me or not. I'm sponsoring you. You understand? Because this is my sobriety. So I said, let me tell you something. I don't care if nobody's asking you. This place is loaded with new people. They don't know crap. You understand what I'm saying? You find some new person, and you go up to them, and you explain to them that you are their temporary sponsor. As far as you know, as far as they know, that's the way this thing works, okay? You know, they ain't going to ask anybody anyway. You just find somebody and tell them you're their temporary sponsor. So at the end of every meeting, they say, anybody need a sponsor or anything like that? Any sponsor, you know, somebody raises a hand. So the meeting ends. The meeting ends. This is a true story. I'm not making this crap up. The meeting ends. Everybody's filtering out. You know, the 12-step house. This gal comes up to me. and she's dragging some 20-year-old, and she says, "This is my new sponsee." And the 20-year-old is like laughing, you know what I mean? Says, "Yeah, I'm her sponsee." I said, "Oh yeah." He says, "Yeah, I'm her sponsee. This is my new sponsee." I said, "Really? When this?" I said, "I got her at the meeting, and her sponsor's there, and they're both." And this gal is laughing. Is that amazing? That's how easy it is. You don't need a pill. You don't need a joint. You don't need anything. You don't need a beer. All you need is to grab some newcomer and say, "I'm sponsoring you." It's all temporary anyway. What do you got? It's that easy. Who would think about someone? And you want some? I'm quite sure that would have never happened unless I said to her, "You go get somebody right now." It's as easy as, and you know what's incredible about that? I could say that to 15 people, and you ready for this? I could tell 15 people the truth, and this is what will cure you. This is what you need. This is what you have to do, and you ready for this? And they won't do it. And they won't do it. I told this gal, "This is what you do." Go figure. She took me at my word, and she did it. I give her all the credit. I give God all the credit. I give her all the credit. Because she had the willingness, even though she might have been scared or thought it was insane, to go ahead and do it. And she did it. And that's what they're telling you to do right here in the book. So a lot of the stuff they talk about in the book, about intensive work with alcoholics, it's all there. It's hidden in plain sight. But the bottom line is, unless somehow somebody lights a fire under your ass or you get desperate or you see it, you just ain't going to do it. But if you do it, you're going to have a lot of joy. It's going to be fantastic. So thank you very much. God bless you.
Please help me thank Russell one more time. Thank you for your service. These past 12 weeks have been great. And even though we don't know each other outside the context of you speaking, you've inspired me in my own recovery. And when you talk, you really highlight the subtlety of this disease and the importance of dependence upon God. And just hits home with this alcoholic every time. And we're just so grateful for you speaking for us. As a group, we wanted to present you with this, these two commemorative, limited edition Alcoholics Anonymous refrigerator magnets. so here you go.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again. All right, now we have Taylor doing our secretary report.
Hi, everybody. I'm your alcoholic secretary named Taylor. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are going around. At this time, I've asked a friend, Brent, to come read the recover statement.
I'm Brett, and I'm an alcoholic. We are not cured of alcoholism. We're covered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we'd be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem, the main problem of the alcoholic centers, in his mind rather than the body. We are now sane. Where alcohol is concerned, consequently, we have recovered.
From the Big Book, 1940-style sponsorship, from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen... felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God does not change over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% or greater success rate. At this time, I would like to thank Russell again. It's our last night with you, but every time you speak, I always get just one little nugget, and I feel lucky to get that. At this time, can I get a show of recovered alcoholics? Raise your hand. Wow, that's fantastic. And can anybody who needs a sponsor raise your hand? Anybody at all? All right, that's all right. If you're too embarrassed, you can come up to the podium at the end of the meeting. We'll get you squared away. Please join us on Monday night for our big book study meeting. Fellowship begins at 6:30, and the meeting starts promptly at 7:15. If you should require a big book of your own, we have large print editions available for sale. Come up to the front. We'll get you squared away at the end of the meeting. We meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 8:15 p.m., and ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you again. Thank you, Russell. We'll have Keith in starting next week, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Taylor. If you guys want to catch up with the podcasts of tonight's meeting or any other week that we've been here, we put them on alcoholicsandgod.org. We've got all of Russell's sessions here, Peter M. before him. Check it out. It's great to listen to during your downtime. I would also... tonight is my going to be my last night up here, and I've just had a really great time with all you guys doing this. It's a lot of fun and honor to introduce Russell. And next week I'm going to be handing this off to Hunter to take over for me. So, you know, let's give him a pregame round of applause, warm him up. Anyway, I'd like to invite you guys all to our big book study, too. Monday nights in the other room, starts at 7:15. If you really want to learn what the book is all about, become a better sponsor, suggest you give it a try. If you want to thank Russell's lineup down the center here afterwards, and we close out by saying the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. We'll see you next week.
I am desperately in need of restoration, yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher, yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
Well, here I go.
Realize that we're